This is the TriDot Podcast. TriDot uses your training data and genetic profile combined with predictive analytics and artificial intelligence to optimize your training, giving you better results in less time with fewer injuries. Our podcast is here to educate, inspire, and entertain. We'll talk all things triathlon with expert coaches and special guests. Join the conversation and let's improve together.
Welcome to the show, everyone. Two things right here at the top of today's episode. If you have never taken a second to leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, I just invite you politely to do so. Our show is growing and more athletes are finding us. And a big part of that is through our listeners leaving ratings and reviews. And item number two, if you are a listener and you don't use TriDot for your triathlon training, we're glad you're here. Our podcast exists for all triathletes, and right now, we actually are looking for non-TriDot athletes to participate in our preseason research project. You get 2 months of free triathlon training, and we get data that helps make TriDot better and better. It's a win-win all the way around. So head to TriDot.com/PSP. That's TriDot.com/PSP to check it out. Great show today. Really hope this one helps some folks out. Staying healthy is paramount to improving as a triathlete. So we have planned a 3-episode series to talk about preventing and treating triathlon injuries. On episode 108, we covered leg injuries. And today we are coming in hot for part 2, focusing on the upper quarter of the body, which for a triathlete is mostly the shoulder and arms and neck. Excited to get to it. Our first coach joining us for this is Dr. BJ Lieber. BJ graduated from the University of Iowa Carver College of Medicine with a doctorate in physical therapy and rehabilitation science. He's a board-certified orthopedic specialist, a certified strength and conditioning specialist, and a USA Level 1 coach. He specializes in comprehensive movement testing and is an avid triathlete himself with over 50 tries under his belt. So BJ, it's part 2 of our Preventing and Treating Triathlon Injuries series. Are you pumped for our conversation today?
Yeah, thanks, Andrew. I'm excited to be back. This should be a fun one to discuss.
Also with us today is Coach Jeff Rains. Jeff is a USAT Level 2 and Ironman U certified coach who is a Master of Science in Exercise Physiology and was a D1 collegiate runner. He has over 45 event finishes to his credit and has coached hundreds of athletes to the Ironman finish line. What's up, Jeff?
Hey, Andrew. I'm armed and ready today to chat about arms and shoulders. Sorry, man. Was that overreaching?
Outstanding.
It's a new year. It's a new year, Andrew. I have to bring back some of the awesome dad jokes, right?
Yeah, you were really going for it there. So I kudos to your commitment to the bit there, for sure. Well, I'm Andrew, the average triathlete, voice of the people and captain of the middle of the pack. As always, we'll roll through our warm-up question, settle in for our main set topic, and then wind things down with our cool down. Really fun story from an athlete, a TriDot ambassador for today's cool down. So stick around to the end for that. Lots of good stuff. Let's get to it.
Time to warm up. Let's get moving.
Not a triathlon specific warm-up question today, but one that I'm excited to throw out to you guys and then to our audience as well on the I Am TriDot Facebook group. Whenever we fire up a movie at home, we have the option to go on a brand new cinematic adventure or rewatch a personal favorite. Of all the movies you have watched multiple times over the years, what movie can you best quote word for word as the movie is playing? Now, this to me is a great kind of a peek into your personality kind of question. So I'm excited to see what you guys say. BJ, what movie is this for you?
Well, for me, it's a no-brainer. I don't want people to judge me on this, but it's The Three Amigos, which for those of you who have never watched The Three Amigos, it's like the Mount Rushmore of comedies. It's got the comedians from back in the day that are on the Mount Rushmore of comedy in my mind, Martin Short, Chevy Chase, Steve Martin. And it's just, you know, it's dumb humor, but it's hilarious. And if you start me at any point in the movie, I can take you all the way to the finish. I know that movie. And it's what's funny about this movie for me, too, is when I first met my wife back in grad school, we were hanging out at her apartment. She was getting something, and she wanted me to pick out a movie for that night just to watch there. And I open up her movie cupboard, and she has The Three Amigos on DVD and VHS. This is like back in the day, right?
So, and it was love right then and there.
I was about ready to get on a knee at that moment.
She's a keeper.
Because I was like, she had both versions, both copies there. And I was like, I was in love. It was over.
And that's how you knew, right then and there.
That's how I knew.
Jeff Rains, what movie is this for you?
You know, I'm actually someone who can't just watch part of a movie. If I start one, I have to watch it all the way to the end. Even if I've seen the movie before, it's just something weird about me. but also, if I've seen the movie once, I'm usually really good at movie trivia and like picking up quotes from that movie. So I just got to see it once, and most likely I'll pick it up. But with having three kids, five and under, right now, I can quote Moana. Frozen.
Nice.
Sing One. Actually, we just took our kids to their very first ever movie in a movie theater last week, and we saw Sing
cool.
2. I know you're a fan of Pixar and those types of movies, so it was great. It was great. So all the kid movies, I've got those memorized currently. But growing up, I watched all the Rocky movies, Indiana Jones, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Jim Carrey. I can quote all those movies. Probably the most are the Rocky movies, are just my favorite. I'd throw those out there.
This, for me, over the holiday break, my wife and I decided to pound through the Lord of the Rings Hobbit series and then the Pirates of the Caribbean series. You know, we've seen all those movies before. We just had to go back and rewatch all of them. And I did not realize that I could quote the Pirates of the Caribbean trilogy pretty much word for word as the movie is playing. And that's not like me. I don't do that with other movies. So that's the answer for me. I'm really excited to hear what our audience has to say, because I know some folks have those movies they just love going back to time and time again, that they know every single word to. So folks, go to the I Am Trident Facebook group, find our post asking this question, and let us know, what movie is this for you that you can quote word for word every time it comes on?
On to the main set. Going in 3, 2, 1.
Our main set today is brought to you by our good friends at UCAN. Here at TriDot, we are huge believers in using UCAN to fuel our training and racing. In the crowded field of nutrition companies, what separates UCAN from the pack is the science behind their superstarch, the key ingredient in UCAN products. While most energy powders are filled with sugar or stimulants that can cause a spike and crash, UCAN energy powders powered by superstarch deliver a steady release of complex carbs to give you stable blood sugar and provide long-lasting energy. I personally fuel my workouts with the Blood Orange Flavored Edge Gel and the unflavored UCAN Energy. Between their energy mix, energy bars, almond butter, and more, there is definitely a superstarch product that you will love. So head to their website, UCAN.co, that's UCAN.co, and use the code TRIDOT to save 10% on your entire order. Once again, that's UCAN.co, promo code TRIDOT. We put our body parts through a good little bit as we swim, bike, and run our way to fitness. Some folks tend to stay healthier easier, and some of us find ourselves experiencing nicks and niggles on a regular basis. And that's why we're visiting with Dr. BJ Leeper to learn how triathletes can prevent and treat triathlon injuries. If you have not listened to episode 108, I highly recommend visiting that episode where we did this with the common leg injuries. And today we move on to the shoulders and arms and neck and upper quarter. So BJ, how common are these kind of injuries as opposed to leg injuries?
Yeah, I mean, in general, I think upper quarter injuries are very common. In the clinic, you know, it's one of our top three areas we treat. So top three areas are typically going to be your lower quarter knee injuries, upper quarter, typically shoulder, and then your spinal related injuries. So in the outpatient orthopedics world, it's very common. In triathlon in particular, triathlon related upper quarter injuries are a little less common.
Okay.
We'll get into that a little bit more, but you know, in general with triathlon, the limited research we have with triathlon tells us that about 75% of triathlon related injuries are overuse injuries. And like we've discussed in previous podcasts, 75% of those are typically lower quarter injuries, more related to running. So if you look at the statistics research wise for the limited research we have with triathlon, generally you're going to see around 10% at most is in triathlon is related to upper quarter injuries, with the most of that being related to the shoulder and obviously more swimming related.
Yeah, that's definitely more weighted to leg injuries than I would have guessed. And we started with the episode in this series on leg injuries because of that, but that's a pretty substantial difference. But if you've struggled with shoulder pain in the swim, or if you've had a bike wreck like Jeff, where you tore something or hurt something or broke something, it's not as common, but there definitely are upper quarter injuries in our sport. So BJ, kind of walk us through, what are the most common upper quarter injuries related to triathlon?
Well, just like you said, Andrew, I think there's kind of two categories. There's the category that you just mentioned with Elizabeth's example, where you've got a traumatic injury, which is obviously, it's more obvious. It's bike crashes, falls. That's going to lead to your fractures, dislocations. Typical bike crashes and various things are going to involve your clavicle and kind of like Jeff was saying, areas around the AC joint, acromioclavicular joint. But the majority of what we see in triathlon is going to be in the second category, which is your non-traumatic injuries. So more of your overuse injuries. And occasionally you'll see this in the upper quarter with triathletes doing complementary weight training. But again, most commonly you're going to see swimming related injuries that affect the shoulder. So to break those out, just generally, not to get too technical into all of these things, but, you're going to hear these terms thrown around a lot with upper quarter injuries for triathlon with the shoulder. You're going to hear the term swimmer's shoulder, which is really a catch-all term, which encompasses a lot of these other things we're going to talk about. Also, you'll hear rotator cuff impingement syndrome, which is another, in the orthopedic world, it's kind of another one of these catch-all terms, which isn't always adequately defined. And so within the shoulder, you're going to see within swimmer's shoulder, if you want to call it that, or rotator cuff impingement, you're going to see those subacromial structures. So you've got the acromion is kind of the arch of bone of your shoulder blade, where you have a lot of structures that lie underneath that. So you've got your subacromial bursa, which is a fluid-filled sac between that arch and the supraspinatus tendon. So there's a commonly inflamed area where you'll get subacromial bursitis. There's tendinopathies where you can get inflammation of those rotator cuff tendons underneath that arch. And that can include all kinds of different muscles we can get into. But then you'll also see with swimmers often instability where they're very mobile, they're very lax in that glenohumeral joint, where they're going to have instability most commonly, kind of the anterior inferior portion of the shoulder, but can be multidirectional. And then again, like we were discussing with Jeff, that area of the AC joint where the clavicle kind of meets the acromion or the outer edge of your shoulder blade. And then your typical muscle strains that might be involved with upper quarter, like pec, lat, upper trap. So there's a lot of different areas we can kind of categorize within the upper quarter or shoulder area with regards to triathlon. But again, the two main categories are going to be traumatic and non-traumatic overuse.
I would just second that. I mean, in my experience, and especially a lot of the athletes that I coach, I'd say hands down, the most upper body injuries are due to overuse injuries. And a lot of it is probably due to improper mechanics. And you know, that overuse and kind of thinking that if the form is bad, people are becoming more efficient at being inefficient and that overuse and overtime. I mean, little things can affect that. A bad bike fit, inefficient form while swimming. But we see it a lot that the hands tingling while you're riding. A lot of times there's too much drop between the handlebars and the saddle. That ulnar nerve is not protected by muscle or bone. And so when that pressure is put on there and the bike fit is too aggressive too soon, or too much weight or gripping too tense on those handlebars, we see that a lot. Of course, the swimmer's shoulder that BJ alluded to, and then neck pain, I think, is a lot of open water sighting, looking up, swimming a little different in open water than you would in a pool, and then also maybe not practicing that aero position enough. So we see a lot of those, probably are the most common.
Yeah, thanks for identifying all of those guys. I mean, that definitely tracks with the things I hear and see our listeners talking about and asking about. I'm excited to dive into all these injuries and dive into what we can do to prevent them and what we can do to treat them. So BJ, what is it about our shoulder in particular? I mean, you're really there as we were talking through a lot of those issues. A lot of them sound shoulder related. What is it about our shoulder just in its anatomy that makes it so prone to injury?
Yeah, I mean, the shoulder's such an amazing joint, and it's kind of the bottom line with this, that one of the reasons I think it's just so prone to injury is because the more that you are given, the more that is required. So the shoulder being one of the most mobile joints in the body, it's required to stabilize itself through a ton of range of motion. And it's very different than like the knee, that's more of a hinge joint, where there's just a certain range that needs to be stabilized. The shoulder needs a full array of mobility and stability within that range. So I think a lot of times because of that, because there's such a high mobility component to the shoulder, it again requires more to stabilize that. And a lot of times I think that's an area we tend to neglect or we lose. And because of that, because the shoulder is so mobile, that becomes the path of least resistance when the body's trying to compensate somewhere. So because it is so mobile, the body just thinks, well, let's pass it to the shoulder. It can move around enough to try to figure something out. And as a result, everything tends to lock up around it. And what's really interesting, and we can kind of discuss a little bit more as we go, but the shoulder, when people feel tightness in their shoulder, a lot of times they think they have a mobility issue. And a lot of times that's not the case. They feel tightness, and it's an attempt of their body to actually put the parking brake on to protect themselves because there's too much mobility that's unstabilized there. So you'll feel stiff and you'll think that naturally I just need to stretch. But the reality is your shoulder is already lax. It's already losing the battle, and your body is tightening up muscles around it to try to stabilize itself, because you're lacking the requisite fundamental stability to own that joint. And that's a big misnomer I think a lot of athletes in general, not just triathletes, get into, is thinking that they have a mobility issue when that's not really the case.
And I'm also, I would imagine that, you know, people have a dominant arm, or maybe even better flexibility in one shoulder than the other. And so that may play into an imbalance using one arm versus the other, or maybe you just sleep on, you know, that same shoulder every night, and maybe that kind of causes one, to tend to be more injury prone or less range of motion or something than the other.
Yeah, exactly. Asymmetry is a big predicator for injury, and within the shoulder, there's a lot of potential for that. There's a lot of potential for muscular imbalances and imbalances of stability or that motor control. And again, going back to why the shoulder's sometimes more injured, a lot of times because there's more moving parts, again, it requires more. And we're going to talk a lot about the scapula, which is kind of the base of your shoulder. And that's a big area that can get out of rhythm, so to speak, and cause a lot of dysfunction too.
I just want to point out to folks, because I always find this fascinating. Jeff, you kind of mentioned sleeping on one side versus the other. And I've seen Jeff Raines talking with runners about their run form, and he can say to them, hey, just watching you run, you sleep on your right side, don't you? And they're like, yeah, I do. How do you know that? And he's like, and you can break down for them.
Creepy.
Yeah. You can break down what it was in their run form that showed you that they probably sleep on their right side. And I've had conversations with BJ about things that hurt on my body. And BJ's been able to say, are you left-handed or right-handed? You're left-handed, right? And we've been able to, and it's like, how do you know these? And you can tell just by your depth of knowledge and what you're seeing and hearing from an athlete. And it's just wild. It's just wild watching you guys bring your textbook knowledge into the actual applied science of the movement of the body. It's just super cool to me. So just wanted to point out that both you guys are freaks in that way as we move on through this podcast. So when we talked about specific lower quarter injuries on episode 108, we talked about specific things like plantar fasciitis, IT band syndrome, et cetera, et cetera. Many of those injuries don't necessarily need to be treated at the source of the pain, but rather there are signs of a problem somewhere higher up the chain of movement. Is it this way with shoulder injuries as well, or is the shoulder a case where the spot that hurts is a spot where the problem likely is?
Yeah, well, I don't know if I've ever told you this, Andrew, but that's a great question. It's probably the first time that you've ever heard that from me.
I often hear that I ask million-dollar questions.
You've got a great question.
I'm still waiting on that $1 million.
No, and that's, to me, that's the way the body works. I mean, we don't move in patterns, we move in parts. Or I'm sorry, we move in patterns, not simply parts. And a lot of times we tend to think about, we'll get caught up in the trees and lose the forest. So whatever analogy you want to use, I think it's definitely pertinent to the shoulder as well. So the shoulder, like we're saying, it's such a mobile area. That's one of the last links in the chain that sometimes gets the buck passed to it, and it has to figure it out. And a lot of times if that's done over time, like we're talking with overuse injuries, it sometimes just can't keep up and it breaks down. And so I think a lot of times that we have to look up the chain, or in this case, we have to look at the axial part of the body, the shoulder blade and the spine, to be able to look and make sure that you've got the shoulder set up for success. But the reality is, when you have symptoms at the shoulder, that is your body telling you that there's an injury there. There's something going on there. So even though the area that technically needs to be addressed from a symptom standpoint may very well lie in the shoulder, a lot of times the root of that issue is not in the shoulder itself. It's somewhere else. And the shoulder is just the symptom. And a lot of times with this, I think about our platform of stability. So we talk about this specifically with triathlon and the swim, bike, and run. If you look at each discipline within swimming, biking, and running, I always think about, where is the body getting its stability from? Where are the impact points where you're gaining stability? So for example, on the run, it's your foot hitting the ground. That's your point of stability. For the bike, it's where your arms meet the arrow bars or the handlebars. It's where your seat hits. It's where your foot touches the pedals. Within the swim, if you think about it, we don't have a fixed point of stability there. So really the stability that comes from swimming is you. Your body is the platform of stability, and it's you in the water where you create that push, that pull to propel yourself forward through the water, but it's not fixed like the ground. It's not fixed like the parts of a bike. So the reality is, if your foundation of stability within the swim is shaky, meaning that your core platform or your shoulder blade platform as you're moving through the water is insufficient, guess what's going to have to make up that last link in the chain to try to propel you forward through the water? It's going to end up being your arm, your upper quarter, your shoulder. So it's interesting to me when we think about that. And I find it no coincidence that when you look at Olympic swimmers, their bodies there's no doubt they have core, right? When you look at a swimmer, arguably you could say they have the best abs known to man.
Yeah.
And that's their foundation. Their platform is their core as they use their arm to propel themselves forward. So if there's an energy leak there through the core or through the shoulder blade, it's going to have to be made up in the shoulder. And so that's why you have to address all of those parts when you're talking about upper quarter injury in the shoulder. It's not just the shoulder. Otherwise, you're missing a big, big piece.
Yeah. And the human body is designed more to pull than it is to push. And if you think about it, a lot of people want to run faster. They want to hit the ground harder, maybe, so they'll travel further in each stride, right? DPS, distance per stride. But really, you want to think lift, lift, lift. We want that elastic chain is where we're going to get that propulsion. And even cycling, most people are overly quad dominant, by nature. And a lot of people are focusing on the push, push, push so much that they kind of bail out of the lift phase of that leg because they're already thinking about pushing down on the pedal with the other leg. And so thinking lift or that elastic chain or a little bit pulling more than pushing can help a lot in injury prevention.
So an athlete begins to feel pain in their shoulder during a swim session. How can they determine if it's leading to a serious problem or if it's just typical training soreness that will go away on its own?
Yeah, like any training, I think there's going to be the natural muscle breakdown that you get from training, the adaptations that you're desiring to improve and to build resiliency within those muscles. But you know, there's a difference between that and then, like we're talking about, determining if it's a serious problem, an injury. And one of the biggest predictors, I think, of potential injury is what previous injury history do you have? So, I mean, we know within the research of various injuries that that's one of the biggest predicting factors is what is your previous history of shoulder injury? Have you had a tweak in your past or a traumatic injury in your past, like we're talking about, where that may have set you up for potential breakdown? The other thing you want to consider is at what point during the activity is it bothering you? Is it only bothering you afterwards? Is it, again, that ache that might be more just residual muscle soreness that's not uncommon? Or is it something that it's starting to affect you during, where when you get to a certain point within the duration of your training or within the intensity of your training, if you have to pull extremely hard to try to increase your pace, are those things starting to affect it where you know it's specific to one of those two things, duration or intensity? Those can be big signs that, okay, there's something going on that's not natural. And then the other big thing to kind of assess, to know when you might have to peel back the layers a little bit more to diagnose, is are basic fundamental movements outside of the water naturally just starting to irritate or bother you? So for example, just taking on and off a shirt, or grabbing a wallet from your back hip pocket. You know, there's basic things you can look at. If those things start to give you discomfort, and we're not always talking about pain, you know, the question we always ask in the clinic is, do you have any discomfort with this movement? And we might take somebody through a basic screen or test of looking at a fundamental pattern like we're describing. And if anything other than a no, you know, if they're like, well, no, it doesn't really hurt, but that's a yes.
Maybe.
You
know? Okay.
So when you pose the question, it's not always pain, but do you have discomfort? Any statement other than a no is a yes. If it's an immediate, nope, fine. But if it's like, well, you know, yes, that's something to be evaluated.
Interesting.
And so those are kind of the tip of the iceberg factors that you can kind of start to evaluate. And really, your body is good at telling you what to listen to. So I think your natural intuition, nobody knows your body better than you. That's what I've always told every single patient I've had, where I might be the expert in knowing certain things about the body, but they know their body better than anybody. So if there's any doubt, any intuitive doubt that, you know, something's not right, have it evaluated. It's way better to evaluate it before it becomes a really serious problem.
So Jeff, as you coach your athletes, I know swim form is a huge part of those conversations when you're trying to make improvements in the pool and in swim splits and swim thresholds. When you have an athlete reporting shoulder pain from their swim sessions, what is usually wrong in their form that can be causing the pain?
Man, good question. I mean, that swimmer's shoulder, that bursitis, is huge, and that's kind of what you immediately go to in your mind. Hey, my shoulder feels a little tight, or you know, something. You know, that the bursitis, the bursa under the shoulder blade, BJ, you know, really broke it down better earlier. But you know, it's part of your scapula. And it gets irritated because the space between your humerus and that acromion is narrow, and it narrows even further with overhead activities. So swimming, right? You're reaching out forward, and that's the kind of the epitome of overhead activity. And so I've seen a lot of shoulder and rotator cuff injuries over the year in athletes, mainly due to inefficient swim form. And these could be due to a recovery arm that's too close to your body, right? You've pushed the water down to that bullseye drawn around your feet. You've engaged that tricep, and you're ready to bring that arm forward above the water. And a lot of people will really have that elbow super high to the sky and really squeeze their back. You know, I like to promote a little bit of a wider recovery arm as coming forward on that recovery stage, but we see that a lot. So a lot of that swimmer's shoulder can be due to a recovery arm that's too close to the body as it's coming forward. We also see the start of the catch phase with that arm reached out in front of you, that overhead position, right? Starting a catch phase with that hand too high, or maybe your arm is straight, kind of even to the surface of the water. So we want to have that wrist lower than the elbow and the elbow lower than the shoulder. So a hand that is a little bit deeper when in doubt, when you start that catch phase. So an arm too straight can cause that. And then as you're progressing through the underwater stroke, that middle phase, the diagonal phase, it's sometimes called, it's actually more so referred to as the power phase of the stroke, to where you've caught the water, you've started pulling it kind of towards your face, towards your body, and then you're powering through it, you're accelerating through as you progress through that. And so when you do that with an arm that is too straight, we see that a lot as well in swimming. And so we want to have a little bit of bend in the elbow. I think that's a swim form episode, which we'll talk about in another episode. But kind of lastly, I think, you know, I've also seen upper body injuries due to too aggressive of a bike fit, maybe when you're not ready, or maybe just the aero pads are too narrow. And you need to widen them out or even angle them a little bit. They don't have to be perfectly parallel to that top tube. And then we see a lot that actually, you know, the last year or two in the sport, we've seen more so the pros especially kind of really hiding behind their hands, kind of like they're praying at the dinner table with both elbows on the table. They're kind of hiding behind that praying mantis hand. We used to see that forearm be closer to parallel to the ground, and a lot of people really tensing their wrists as they're gripping those aero bars. And so we want to keep a wrist that's slightly higher than the elbow. So that's something else that we always see. And then neck injuries, the same thing. A little trick, maybe in aero position is to keep the head down, but use a little bit more of eyes up, instead of just overstressing that neck. But we said it before and everyone kind of knows it, but you always choose comfort over aggressiveness on that bike fit. So don't rush into having a seat that's 4 inches higher than your aero pads, right? Especially for long course.
Yeah, I was riding with a buddy of mine pretty early in my tri career, and I just gotten the tri bike. I've done a few rides on it, and very early, thankfully, I had a buddy of mine riding next to me, and he was like, "Hey, like head down, eyes, you know, kind of look ahead up the road with your eyes, not your head." And that was something I was able to a lesson I was able to learn early, thanks to a buddy of mine.
I think it's Jeff brought up some really good things there, and I think one interesting question.
Well done, Jeff. Well done.
Yeah, well done, Jeff. I think the really interesting question that comes from some of this is looking at does bad swim form or bad technique come from poor movement, poor shoulder mobility or stability, or does bad mobility, you know, does bad form come as a result from that directly, or is it vice versa? You know,
it's a real chicken or egg situation.
Exactly. And I feel like our bodies are smart enough to try to figure out a way, even though that way might be dysfunctionally. And it's sometimes set up for dysfunction because we don't have the correct requisite mobility especially through our spine. So with regards to the swim, what I feel like happens quite often is as athletes, as swimmers, we might lack proper thoracic spine extension and rotation. So instead of getting the desired body roll, body rotation through the water, like we know should happen with the swim, we tend to stay pretty stiff and stagnant through the spine. And as a result, like Jeff was describing, the arm tends to get out of position. And what's really interesting to me too, is that the position of our propulsion and our catch is a very common position that we use in physical therapy in the clinic to test for provocation of those subacromial structures. So it's an impingement test that looks just like the catch portion of your swim. And naturally, if things are healthy and happy, we should be able to assume that position. Like Jeff said, there's not a lot of space there, but naturally we should be able to assume that position without any irritation. And a lot of times with overuse, if the body is compensating for some of these dysfunctions, that area gets irritated. And then that catch position is just as provocative as anything. And that's why we use that type of position in the clinic to actually test those structures, because it's a good indicator of something is awry there.
I also want to add that for anybody who thought that 2 minutes of Jeff Raines talking about swim stroke form was interesting, Jeff, you kind of teased for a brief second. We do have a swim stroke episode coming. This current episode is number 120 that you're listening to right now. It's happening in real time. Next week, episode 121 is a run shoe episode. We have some guests coming on to talk about just the most modern day run shoes that are out on the market right now. And then episode 122 will be Coach Jeff Raines and TriDot Coach Joanna Namey doing a deep dive into how to refine your swim stroke. So really excited about that. Just a few weeks away. But back to shoulders and upper quarter, I think for a lot of triathletes dealing with shoulder pain in the pool, you know, it's usually just a slight to moderate amount of pain or soreness. And often we can train through it and sometimes need to train through it to get to and through that next race event. I certainly, this previous year in 2021, trained through some shoulder discomfort in the pool, knowing I had Escape from Alcatraz and Ironman Waco on the calendar. What can we do to manage shoulder issues and upper quarter issues until we get through the backside of race day?
Yeah, and I think that's what we struggle with a lot is when do we take time off to really address and get to the root of things, or when is it just, can we get away with just managing it and getting through, getting by to get that race accomplished? And again, sometimes your intuition can guide you, but sometimes you can't wait. Sometimes you need to actually start addressing it. And sometimes it can be an easy thing where you don't need to wait to truly address it. And we'll just keep putting Band-Aids on and trying to work around it. But I think it's wise to pursue some evaluation and treatment, because you might be able to incorporate that very simply as you're continuing to train, so you can ensure you get to the starting line. But when we do try to just simply manage, you know, those things that we have to do to try to get through, a lot of times you have to first address if there's any chemical irritation present. So if there's inflammation, and you know, the best way to think of inflammation is like a sunburn of your skin, like it hurts to the touch, right? It's very a little input that causes it to be irritating. And if that's the case, you definitely need to be addressing the chemical irritation first. And so that's your typical rest, ice, NSAID approach. But again, you have to get to the root of it. So I think sometimes we can modify with volume, changing our volume, changing the intensity. Sometimes we'll advise, you know, avoiding heavier pulls. So maybe you scrap the paddle work for a period of time to limit that. But again, I'm not a big fan, and obviously this is what I do, but I'm not a big fan of just trying to brush things under the rug and just pretend there's not an issue there. So yes, there are things you can do to get by, like controlling chemical inflammation and modifying your activity, but it's like driving a car, in my opinion. It's like you could have a deficit in your car, and it might be okay when you just drive around town, but you go on that long road trip, it's not a matter of if it's going to break down, it's just when. So I think, you know, to truly be good to ourselves, we have to look into that before it becomes too much of an issue.
So BJ, once our shoulder pain is becoming a serious problem, and we know it's a serious problem, we want to address it, what steps should we take to get shoulder pain in particular resolved?
Yeah, so I think there's a couple things we can do on our own before we maybe need to seek professional help. And I think that's kind of something we're discussing just even offline earlier, just talking about how can you assess for asymmetries in yourself? How can you assess for some of these impingement issues in yourself? And there's really some simple ways you can do it. I think a lot of times our intuition can tell us where the area is that's being affected, but sometimes we need to be able to screen or have somebody else screen us in order to figure that out. So there's some simple things that if we start kind of at the base, if we start at the thoracic spine is amazing with allowing our bodies to move through extension and rotation. So especially with the swim, we need to be able to assess rotation in a real simple way. And this is something I'll try to describe verbally, but if you were to sit kind of cross-legged, Indian leg style, in the middle of a doorway, facing the doorway, kind of perpendicular to the opening of the doorway, so you've crossed your legs and your legs are squared right up into the doorway or the door jamb. If you took a dowel, or sometimes we'll have people just take like a Swiffer handle or a broomstick or something, where you could place it across your shoulders with your elbows down. So you don't want your elbows up, but your elbows are close to your body, your arms are across, and your hands are touching out each opposite shoulder, and you've got a dowel going right across your shoulder to kind of be an indicator of rotation without letting your lower body move. So keeping your legs crossed, can you rotate and touch one side of that dowel all the way to the door frame? And then testing that and just looking at it on the other side. And if one side is significantly easier than the other, or one side causes discomfort compared to the other, that's an indicator. That's a big indicator of asymmetry. And so that's a fundamental movement of screening your thoracic spine rotation. Do you have an adequate amount of rotation? And then looking at, like we're saying, that catch position in the shoulder. If you take your shoulder that's aggravated, and really you want to compare both sides, but if you take your shoulders and reaching your palm across to your opposite shoulder, keeping your palm down on your opposite shoulder, lifting your elbow towards the sky as hard as you can or as high as you can without letting your opposite palm come up. If you have discomfort or there's significant difference in mobility between one side and the other, again, that might mean that there's significant dysfunction that needs to be further evaluated. And especially if there's pain in any one of those screens, you don't just have a movement problem, you might have a medical problem. So those are some of the things you can do to kind of test yourself and look. But the reality is, once you've assessed and you kind of know where the deficits lie, focus first on mobility. And again, like we were saying earlier, sometimes it's a mobility restriction in the muscles, soft tissue extensibility dysfunction. Sometimes it's a mobility issue at the joint. But regardless, you need to make sure you've cleared mobility before you start to work on stability, or what most people would describe as strength. So if you're just saying, well, I probably just need to be stronger in my shoulders, but you haven't addressed your underlying mobility issue, whether it's at your T-spine or your shoulder, you might just be putting fitness on dysfunction. So you might just be making something even worse by trying to strength train. So you need to address things in that proper order. And again, if there's something that just doesn't seem right, that's your indicator to seek more professional evaluation to get it addressed. And it's probably one of the biggest steps to ultimately getting it resolved in the right way.
As you were talking, I Googled thoracic spine just to see an image, kind of a chart of where on our body that was. Obviously it's the spine, but you know, just more specific. I definitely 100% BJ misspelled thoracic. I was spelling it like Jurassic, as in Jurassic Park, but yeah, with a THU instead of a JU. So I did a little double S in the middle, and that is not how you spell thoracic spine. And I now know that thanks to this podcast episode. You know, a lot of times, BJ, we're throwing on hypotheticals. If people are feeling this, they should do that. But because everybody's scenarios and what they're going through is specific. So on this episode, since I have dealt with some shoulder pain in the last 6 months, I just wanted to use myself as a case study, because I want everybody to kind of hear what it's like to have you break down an injury for them. And so really quickly, I'll try to give this 60-second version for everybody on the background of my shoulder injury. My left shoulder, when I was a young 20-something, not a triathlete, just a runner, would go to the gym to work out, you know, after work. I sustained a left shoulder injury where my left shoulder, just from overuse, was really hurting just all the time. It was wearing down in workouts. I was in pain in between workouts. And so I went to an orthopedic specialist. I got it looked at, and I actually had some bruising of the bone there on my left shoulder. And basically the orthopedic surgeon, he was like, you know, that there's nothing really we can do. If you wanted, we could make an incision and take that part of your collarbone out. And so you wouldn't experience the pain, but you would have less collarbone there. And that kind of sounded freaky to me. So I declined that invitation, but basically I just knew I needed to be a little bit more careful in my workouts. He explained to me that injury is seen in people that do a lot of pushing motions. And Jeff, you talked about pushing versus pulling motions earlier. So doing a lot of bench press type workouts and a lot of things were, push-ups where I wasn't doing enough pulling motions. And so it was like add in some more pull motion based stuff and be careful with it. And I just kind of had to manage it. So fast forward to me being a triathlete, my left shoulder in the pool would from time to time experience more discomfort than the right shoulder. It does have that previous injury in its background. And in the lead up to Escape from Alcatraz triathlon, I was doing a pool session. I wasn't doing anything out of the ordinary. I came off the wall and just in that motion of coming off the wall, I'm in streamline. My arms are both extended forward in front of me. And I always take my first stroke with my left arm. And I went to make that pull motion and my hand goes under the water. I go to start pulling back and I definitely felt a tweak, a twinge in my left shoulder. And I remember thinking like, that didn't feel right. And I kept swimming. I could keep swimming on it. And so basically for the next couple of months, as I trained for Escape from Alcatraz, as I trained for Ironman Waco, that discomfort was in my left shoulder every single swim, every single time. I came off the wall. I tried to take my first stroke with my right hand. I tried to not put a lot of my body weight on my left arm when it was extended in my rotation. And I just kind of had to manage. I basically cut out doing fast intervals. I kept it threshold and lower. And I really had to be careful when I was doing threshold sets. And so that is a very specific example of myself in the pool, a very recent shoulder injury, something that I'm still dealing with. Because frankly, after Ironman Waco, I kind of took a couple months off of swimming, just with travel and work and whatnot, just kind of took time off in the pool. And my first session back in the pool, in late December, almost a full 2 month break for my shoulder, went to take my first pull with my left arm. And boom, that same discomfort was still there. So it was clearly something that
rests. Do you breathe, out of curiosity, do you breathe more predominantly or comfortably to your right side?
Yes, great question, Jeff. I am a bilateral breather. I'm very comfortable on both sides. I typically do every three strokes. I take a breath, and so I'm pretty well practiced in breathing both ways. So that is out. But BJ, I just want to, that's all the background I think you need. And that's probably even more than you might need. And thank you everybody for listening to me whine about my left shoulder. But I want people to see, armed with that information, what would you tell me to do, and how would you diagnose what's going on in my shoulder?
Yeah, and that's a great case example, because a lot of these things we've been talking about before this are injuries that are more subacromial. So it's underneath that acromial arch where the shoulder is more affected at the glenohumeral joint, or kind of the ball of your shoulder. But what you're describing, Andrew, is more along the AC joint, and where it's basically where your scapula meets your clavicle or your collarbone. And so that little bump on the top of your shoulder where those two structures meet, that's your acromioclavicular joint or your AC joint. And so that's not as common of an area, but it's definitely an area that can become affected. And like you're describing, one of the best things you told me as far as information to try to evaluate and help is that previous history of injury with overhead or pressing, pushing from the weight room. And a lot of times that area can become irritated, where the technical term for it is, you'll get acromioclavicular osteolysis, where it just means the distal end or the outer part of your clavicle starts to become irritated, for lack of better terms. And that is something that could lead to osteoarthritis of that joint down the road if it's not addressed.
Looking forward to that.
It's a joint just like you have cartilage in your knee. It's got cartilage there. It's a joint like any other joint, but because when you move your arm overhead, it's kind of an accessory mover of your shoulder. It's part of the rhythm, what we call the scapulohumeral rhythm. So as you move your arm upwards, your glenohumeral joint, or the ball of your shoulder, is what typically initiates that motion. And you have about 120 degrees of mobility normally there. So think, for example, if arms straight up by your ear is 180, if you could move that far truly, 120 degrees of that motion happens at the ball of your shoulder. Okay. And then after you've taken up that 120 degrees, the remaining roughly 60 degrees happens through your shoulder blade. And your shoulder blade articulates at your sternum. So you've got your SC joint, and then it articulates at the clavicle as well. You've got your acromioclavicular joint or your AC joint. So those two joints make up the remaining roughly 60 degrees. So what can happen with that scapulohumeral rhythm, if there's an injury to one of those articulating joints of the shoulder blade, that rhythm gets off. And all of a sudden, a lot of times you'll see what they call scapular dyskinesis, which means that for lack of a better term, your shoulder blade is getting sloppy, where it starts to move early. And then by the time you've already gotten to that overhead reach position, you've already taken up all the motion in your shoulder blade. So there's no more room for your shoulder blade to move. It's already superiorly translated. It's already upwardly rotated. And then the last link of the chain is just jamming down on that AC joint or wherever it might be. Sometimes it's more the subacromial space in the glenohumeral joint. Sometimes it's more that AC joint, like you're mentioning, where your body's just trying to jam through that joint to get anything else it can.
Yeah.
Because maybe there's a lack of thoracic rotation already. So it's already having to make up for that. So there's all these things that can lead to that dysfunction where we know where you hurt, you know where you hurt, but the root cause of what needs to be trained to fix that might not be at that AC joint. Like you could cut out that lateral third or distal portion. They call that a distal clavicle excision, DCE, which that's like the Band-Aid treatment that improves where you hurt, and it can buy time, but it doesn't change your dysfunction. And even like you said, you rested for a while, it felt better. You go back to the pool, it's the same old thing because it's a motor control issue. It's that rhythm issue. So what you have to start to do is evaluate further to figure out, okay, where is the lowest hanging fruit that needs to be addressed? Is it my T-spine? We haven't even talked about the neck, but a lot of times the neck will start to put the parking brake on to try it. It thinks it's helping that whole process, but you're starting to develop upper trap tightness because it's trying to limit that upward rotation of the shoulder blade or put a block on that. And all of a sudden what's happening is you're just getting tighter and tighter. And after a swim, you realize, gosh, my neck hurts now all of a sudden. And that contributes to that dysfunction. So it's kind of this cyclical nature where you hurt because you hurt, your body tightens up because you're tight, it causes more dysfunction, you hurt more. And so it's kind of this cycle that you have to break. And a lot of it ties back to scapular stability, but just like we were saying earlier, that can't happen until we've cleared all the areas you need to be mobile with and also fairly symmetrical with. So those are, it's kind of a long-winded breakdown, but again, I think that case example allows us to talk about things in a very good way to address all those parts that really need to be addressed to clean something like that up for long term. Otherwise, you know, we're running that risk of early onset osteoarthritis in that particular joint. And that's obviously something we don't want.
But I wanted people to hear just that entire detailed breakdown because I've had yourself, you know, we've talked one-on-one about certain things I've dealt with. I've worked in the past with different physical therapists at different seasons of my life and gotten great wisdom like that from them. And we tell people on these episodes, like get screened, figure out what's going on, figure out what the root cause of your problems are. And I want people to hear, like, when you go to somebody as knowledgeable as BJ Leeper, as knowledgeable as a fellow PT, I mean, that's the kind of knowledge they have. And that's what really helps you get to the root of what you're going through is the way you're able. I mean, when I was telling you that issue and you were just now when you were showing, okay, it's happening when your arm's extended. It's like, yes, that's exactly when it happens. It happens when my arm is extended out in front of me in my stroke and you start breaking down what's going on. Super fascinating stuff. And I would encourage anybody, if you're experiencing some issues, some problems, to get screened, have somebody more knowledgeable than yourself, take a look at what's going on there. So, there's no foolproof way to prevent an upper quadrant injury or shoulder pain, obviously. But what are some things that we can do to kind of raise the odds that that part of the body stays happy and healthy?
I think the thing we say a lot, and I've said this before in previous podcasts, I know, is you need to be a sniper. Nobody goes to sniper school just to learn how to shoot. You learn how to aim. And that's really the gist of it. When you're trying to keep that area of your body happy and healthy, you have to know your deficits. You have to know where your weaknesses truly lie in order to train them effectively. You know, the tendency is with conventional treatment in the past of shoulders, whether you've had pain or not, it's like, oh, I know I need to strengthen my shoulders. So the conventional history will show, well, here, take these bands and you need to move your shoulder in this rotational direction, side to side, holding your elbow at a 90 degree angle. And while that's isolating the rotational muscles of the shoulder and maybe strengthening them in isolation, it's not really training your ability to stabilize. You're kind of targeting an area in a nondescript way. It's like saying that you need to improve your squats. So you're just going to strengthen your legs by doing knee extension. And the reality is, no, you can isolate that muscle. You can strengthen that muscle, but you need to squat to be able to squat better. You need to be able to train your deadlift, your hip hinge to be able to squat better. The same thing is with the shoulder. You need to realize that your shoulder moves in patterns. And what's really interesting to me is that the way we naturally were designed and naturally developed, when you're a baby rolling around on the floor, growing up and, you know, going through those phases of development where you're crawling, you're pushing yourself up, by the time you get to your feet, you've established a certain amount of shoulder stability. And at no point did you do PT 101 of rotator cuff exercises, moving your arm in and out in that rotational manner, but you earned the right to push, pull, lift, carry by the fact that you rolled around, reached with your arms, you pushed yourself up, you crawled, weight bearing on your elbows. So there's certain things we don't have to reinvent the wheel with, in my opinion. We can go back to basic primitive movement patterns, and what that looks like in the gym is it's planking, it's reaching, it's rolling, it's diagonal patterns. It's things that tend to be a lot more functional than just this isolation. And I tell this to people all the time, where if you're going to the gym and you're still doing the same six lifts you did in high school, you're probably missing the boat. You're probably already strong in those areas. It's not like those are always bad things, but attack your deficits. Do the things you know you suck at. And for a lot of us as triathletes, even, you know, specifically even cyclists, you tend to not be very good in your upper quarter. And so I think that's an area, you know, you have to attack your deficits. But if you know, okay, I need to attack my shoulders, have some guidance. If you're not sure, have somebody help evaluate you, show you what the specific things are that you can address, and address them in a very specific way. And it might be not as conventional as what you might see other people doing in the gym, but it might be the best thing for you.
Yep. So with all that, we've talked about shoulder injuries, specifically, you know, pool swimmer shoulder. I think a lot of folks, that's what they're dealing with. If they're dealing with an upper quadrant triathlon related injury, BJ, you just talked very, very well about shoulder, you know, upper quadrant injuries in the gym, which is another place we can pick up things like that. I mean, in the Andrew Harley shoulder case study, I first picked up my shoulder injury in a gym. So it's definitely a place we need to be careful in the movements we're doing and intentional with the movements that we're doing. The only other avenue I can think of where having an upper quadrant injury would be common is through a bike crash. And Jeff Raines, earlier you mentioned your one upper quadrant injury was bike crash related. We talked about Elizabeth James having a bike crash related upper quadrant injury. Whether we get struck, whether we hit debris on the road and go down, or whether we just fail to unclip at a stoplight and fall over embarrassingly on our own arm or shoulder, how should we handle it when we injure our upper body in a bike crash?
Yeah, and I think anytime there's a trauma like that, to seek some imaging, just x-rays to rule out any bony injury, depending on the type of trauma. But anytime an area of the body is injured with a traumatic injury like that, you know, you go through a painful phase and then you might come out of that and you feel okay. But just because you don't hurt doesn't mean you're completely healed. So a lot of times through injury, our muscles become inhibited in certain ways. It's our body's natural protection mechanism. So even as we come out of that and we feel okay, ensure that you're completely okay as far as going through, again, screening, ensuring that the full pattern is back normally, that it's the timing of your muscles, not just the muscles are strong, but the timing of those muscles are good. That whole reset, reinforce, reload mantra. And sometimes to do that, you might need a little bit of rehab help. But in general, I think there's there's a lot of things that you can get on the wrong side of after a traumatic injury. So just checking those boxes is good.
Great set, everyone. Let's cool down.
For our cool down today, we have a fantastic story that came in from one of our Trydot ambassadors, Seth Wittrall. Seth posted this story to the Iron Trydot Facebook group, and I saw it, and gosh, it just made me laugh pretty hard. Reached out to him, and he was happy to share it to our podcast audience. Basically, Seth just really wanted a treadmill, and somehow he ended up with not just one, but two basically free treadmills. There's a lot of twists and a lot of turns to this story. Again, it made me chuckle, so I'm excited for you guys to hear it. Take it away, Seth.
Hey, Trydot family. My name is Seth Wittrall, and I just wanted to recap a little story that I posted on the Facebook page. So this story basically is how I acquired two free treadmills within the span of a month, but only one is currently working. So keep your eyes and ears out and open for potential opportunities for ways to save money and acquire objects for free or next to free. So November 5th, my wife and I were graced with our second child, which we are very happy about. Everybody is happy and healthy and home, so we're thankful there. After the first week we had stayed at her parents' house, I was returning to our house with a load of stuff, and just around the corner, there was a treadmill at the end of someone's driveway. So I pulled over and asked the gentleman if it was for free or for sale, and he said it was free. And of course, I was shocked and amazed and very happy. So was able to get it off the roadside, go home, unload the car, come back, pick it up, bring it back to the house, and unload it. Finish up what I need to for the day, and go ahead and start to play with it. I plugged it in, and in less than 3 minutes, even though it was working perfectly well, I was standing on it, walking, trying some of the controls, a static electric shock fried the system. And so now I was out of treadmill. I was kind of bummed. But it still had power to it, but didn't work. So that was sitting there, and I went back and forth between a local tech, waiting for them to come, and finally emailed the company proper, but to no avail. They think pretty much the motherboard had died, whatever, fuses. I'm not exactly sure. So 3 weeks after that, as I'm coming home from dropping our other son off at daycare, I turn the corner into a neighborhood, and there's a second treadmill sitting on the side of the road in front of someone's house that had just been rolled out. And again, couldn't believe my eyes. So I pulled over, checked it out, went home, made sure there was room in the car, went back, loaded it up, got it home. This was a Nordic Track, which I was like, well, at least if I need parts, I'm probably going to be able to find them fairly easily. Plugged it in, go to try it out, no safety key. So order a safety key, shows up that Saturday. Sure enough, universal safety key for Nordic Track. Thing works beautifully. So we've been able to use that treadmill. The other one is still in flux, as a tech did come by and say, yes, we needed new parts. So maybe for around $200, we can get the first one fixed, which we're very happy about. And the likelihood is if it does get working, we'll figure out which one we like better and gift off or put out on the curb the other machine, hoping that someone else can take good fortune. Anyway, I just want to say, keep your eyes and ears open for potential ways to get equipment for next to nothing. And I want to express my sincere gratitude to everyone at Trydot and the Trydot family and coaches for being such helpful people to everything that we do as athletes. Take care. Good luck at your races this year.
That's it for today, folks. I want to thank Dr. BJ Leeper and Coach Jeff Raines for talking about shoulders and the upper quarter of our body with us today. Shout out to UCAN for partnering with us on today's episode. Make sure you head to UCAN.co, and use promo code TRYDOT for 10% off your next Superstarch order. Enjoying the podcast? Have any triathlon questions or topics you want to hear us talk about? Head to TRYDOT.com/podcast and click on Submit Feedback to let us know what you're thinking. We'll have a new show coming your way soon. Until then, happy training.
Thanks for joining us. Make sure to subscribe and share the TriDot podcast with your triathlon crew. For more great Tri content and community, connect with us on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. Ready to optimize your training? Head to TriDot.com and start your free trial today. TriDot, the obvious and automatic choice for triathlon training.